NRP, S2, E45, Influences and Inspirations, Part 2.
One thing I forgot to mention, because you were talking about like movies that where you like it's sort of like the Matrix, where you go in, is I know you haven't heard of it because I mentioned it to you before. It was like another movie. It was like called Gamer, where you go into like a video game. But then obviously you've heard of Avatar, because that was like sort of like you go in and then you're like a different creature. You know, you like jack into the Matrix and then you're in another world.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Were you a big Avatar fan?
Well, see, a lot of people were kind of upset about the story simplicity in Avatar, and there's that, and then a lot of people were kind of upset with the whole, oh, white man believes that the native people are so superior to him, and all of a sudden, oh, hey, he happens to be the best native, you know. There's a lot of people that were very upset with that, too. But I think, you know, art-wise, Avatar is a gorgeous looking film. I mean, there's no question of that. And for what the story is, it functions. I mean, I can see the problems with it, like that it's very simple, and that it is white man comes into the place. You know, they're basically stand-ins for Indians or native people of some other culture, and oh, aren't they magical? We should respect them. And then, oh, but we're suddenly going to be the alpha.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I can have problems with that, but I mean, it is also the highest grossing movie of all time, and there's going to be 3 sequels, so.
Yeah, but that's just like every other movie, I guess.
Well, that's James Cameron for you. I mean, the thing is, for what it is a beautiful looking film. The acting on it is very solid, and you know, everybody involved in it believes in the film. It's like one of those, it's the sum of the parts argument, where it's like there's a lot of good going for it. But, because there are other movies that are, like, you know, can be, like, 3 hours and aren't masterpieces, you know? And then there's, right. You know, and then there are the ones where it's like, okay, this is a good film. Because I remember watching it going, okay, this is an experience. Like, I saw it in 3D, and the 3D, I mean, some people prefer gimmicky 3D, and, you know, this was more environmental, but it actually used it. Like, most 3D movies, when you see them, it's like, oh, hey, there's that one shot that you know, it's like, whatever. You know, but this one it actually works. It's like, okay, this enhances the effect of the film. Like, I'm not gonna criticize that it's a well done film. It's like, I don't, you know, I mean, there's problems with it. I'm gonna identify those. You know, I've identified those, and it's like, I, you know, it's whether or not you can get around those. I, you know, I'm not gonna complain about those, because there's a lot of films that have horrible messages, horrible writing, or other problems, but I still like them. So yeah, you know.
Well, one movie that sort of inspired me to try to get into doing like compositing stuff of like compositing 3D over live action, I sort of respected those Garfield movies. I thought those were pretty well done, visually at least, you know.
For what they are. That's all I'm going to say about that. Well, Garfield as a property is, you know, Jim Davis, he created Garfield, and, you know, like, I read, you know, as a kid, I, of course, had the Garfield collections, because it was, a popular, successful, you know, newspaper comic strip. It was in all the papers. And at least over the last, I'm going to say, 20 years or so, it's been, the strip is reduced to basically 3 panels of, there's John, there's Garfield. Sometimes audio pop up. Usually it's not. I hate Mondays. John, you're such a screw up. You know, that. And it's like, I remember when I was a kid in the 80s and 90s, like, there was Garfield Christmas. Did you ever see the Garfield Christmas special?
I think so, yeah.
Where it showed his family and all that. That was a great special. Like, I would hold that. Like, it is equal to the Peanuts Christmas special, if not better. I would argue better, because it cheers you up. Like, you would watch that along with Rudolph and stuff. So, you know, the problem is, though, that Garfield as a property, much like newspaper strips in general, you know, it's become a property, and, the like, I don't know. I mean, I've got respect for Jim Davis, for a guy who can build the empire that Paws Inc. is and all that he's done. You know, it's just, yeah. And then, you know, his creation got, you know, bled into the Garfield movies, which, I don't know, the thing is that there's this whole generation of, like, CG talking animal movies and, like, the Smurfs movies, you know, these products, you know, the Chipmunks movies, you know, movies where there's a CG character running around in a real environment.
Yeah, it revolves mainly around the CG character.
Yeah, it's like, the thing is, like, I realize that's not for me. As an adult male, I can, you know, my age, I can understand that. Like, there's a lot of people that they're like, well, no, everything should be for me, because I'm me, you know, and there's a lot, like we've talked about, a lot of entitled, and there's a lot of young, you know, a lot of people that, like, you know, oh, everything should be about me, and it's like, I would really like if all films could be, you know, enjoyed, like we were talking about The Croods earlier, you know, and that's a film that kids can love it, adults can watch that, and it's good for both of them, you know, and...
Yeah.
The problem, you know, and the problem with, like, the Garfield movies is, like, I don't think that I don't think the people putting those together respect the audience enough. Like, I mean, it's not, I mean, probably not so much with the Garfield movies. I mean, there's some stuff that's like, so wait, John, and there's actually the veterinarian Liz, and there's actually a bit, you know, there's a little bit of character with that. I'll give them credit for that, you know. And they got Bill Murray to voice Garfield. So it's
yeah, always... I was going to ask you about that. What do you think about... Didn't he do voices for the cartoons, too?
No. He... Garfield, and in fact, Bill Murray's other character, Peter Venkman in Ghostbusters, those were both, at least originally, voiced by Lorenzo Music. He was also Norman the Bellman on... was it Rhoda, or was it Mary Tyler Moore Show? But he was a very distinct... He had a very distinctive voice. He passed away, and... Bill Murray, you know, he played Bill Murray's character, so it's like, you know, it's like, well, if you could get Garfield voiced by anybody and Lorenzo Music's not here, well, Bill Murray in the big screen version, and it's like, I don't know how they managed to get him to do the project. You know, he's joked that, like, he thought it was a Coen Brothers film, and, I don't know. I mean, I don't fault the guy, because he's a working actor and he's a talented one. It's just... You know, I'm not going to fault the Garfield movies, because I know who they're not for me. You know, films like that and the Smurfs, they're for little kids. I just wish that movies that were for little kids were for everybody. You know, you know, we were talking about Monster House before.
Yeah.
You know, there's that, and Paranorman, and stuff like that, where these movies, you know, yeah, kids, they're marketed as quote-unquote kids' films. But everybody can see these, and everybody will love them. And, you know, versus, you know, the squeakquel.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, Ian, as a man of... You're about my age, right? I'm 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does the squeakquel look like to you?
It looks like crap.
I'm going to say it... I mean, I could understand, you know, I grew up with the Chipmunks. I watched the 80s cartoon as a kid, and then later I watched the older 60s one, you know. It's like, I get it. I get what the Chipmunks are, and I get that you want to make things fresh for the kids. But, by that token, I don't know. It's just like, you know, Underdog and all, you know, these other shows, talking animals and CG character.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I like the Garfield, because it was like, you know, that was one of the first ones of that type of movie, I believe, like the first Garfield. I just thought it was incredible what they could do with rendering the fur, and, you know, they had all the detailed shadows and stuff. I was actually surprised. I didn't know it for a couple of years that it was actually CG. I thought it was like stop motion or something back in the day, but I remember that Small Soldiers movie was, like, it looked really good for the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that movie with, like, the animating, like, toys and stuff?
I know of it. I didn't watch it because, I don't know. I mean, that was way back in the days of, like, you know, that was, like, the original Toy Story back then, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
So, yeah. Like, at that point in time, like, you know, that was back when my parents would take me to movies, and I didn't, you know, like, I saw Indian in the Cupboard.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I have respect for all these types of movies that was back in the day that it was like the, it was revolutionary, the type of technology at the time that went into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like you're saying, it's like, it's a lot of these family CG films are like a dime a dozen, you know?
Yeah, and it's kind of sad though. You know, like, I'm sure it's, like, the creative people behind it to render that stuff, it's, like, the creative people doing the, you know, the computer effects and all this stuff, and that, you know, they're very talented, you know, Life of Pi kind of stuff that looks, you know, I'm sure the same teams that worked on, you know, films that I would never watch also worked on the special effects of films I would love and everything. It's just, you know, somebody, either a marketing person or the producer, somebody in charge of this decided, okay, this film is going to be targeted at this audience, and we can't have certain things, and we have to make certain things that, you know. So, but yeah, there's with CG films and stuff like that, you know, my thing is, I love handcrafted films, like, drawing and stuff like that. It's like, I mean, even if it's drawn digitally, there's just something about the what you can do with drawings coming to life that I don't know. I mean, I have appreciation for people that can model and create CG. You know, there's CG films that I think are gorgeous, but then again, you know, like, I love stop motion films too. Neither of us do that, but I, you know,
yeah, I was gonna ask you what your opinion on the. All the Tim Burton movies.
I have yet to see Frankenweenie because my mom didn't want to see it because she thought it'd be scary, even though we went and saw Prometheus together. So, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I know I liked... Obviously, I liked Nightmare Before Christmas. I think the problem is it's the fan base on that. I mean, like we've said before, it's like the film itself is great. The fandom that sprouted up around it can be a little toxic at times.
You know? Yeah.
And, you know, and then Corpse Bride, I actually liked that one. The problem is, like, you know, I was kind of in, like, when Roger Ebert and Roper reviewed that one, you know, Ebert liked it, and then Roper was like, can you name, like, you know, he's like, can you say any of the words from the lyrics in those that didn't have any really catchy songs? Like, the Corpse Bride? That's why. I mean, it was a great visual-looking film. I mean, the story was kind of cute. I liked it. You know, I mean, you feel kind of bad for the Corpse Bride, but in the end, you know, she helps the Johnny Depp character and his bride to be get together. You know.
Yeah.
I liked it. It, you know, it was a very good-looking film because it crossed, you know, stop motion and CG. I put it kind of in with, like, James and the Giant Peach, you know, where it's, like, a great-looking film. Don't think about it too much. You know, and that's fine. That, you know, a film can be, you know, visual, you know, I mean, a film can have no words and just be all, you know, a film can be all conceptual. A film can be a lot of things. You know, I'm not everything has to be Gone with the Wind. Not everything has to be Citizen Kane. But...
Right.
You know, I like that. Paranorman, I'm going to say, is probably my favorite film that's come out in the last 2 years. I'm going to say it's a, you know, you can see the hand craftsmanship that goes into it. You know, the people, everything that's in that somebody had to make and put in there. Like, there's a little tiny lamp and there's a little tiny bed. And then there's a poster that has a picture of something. And somebody had to paint that, you know.
Yeah, that's another to-do on my list. I know now that I saw... Shawshank. I need to watch the Paranorman, probably, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is about Paranorman is, like, it's one of those films where you watch it and you're like, this is stop motion. Somebody went and moved a puppet frame by frame to make this, and it's like, there are CG effects in it, but there's a lot where they're like, yeah, we actually modeled this to make it look like it was done CG, or make it look like it was done this one way or another, and it's like, it's really impressive. There's a lot of story with it. But yeah, we can talk about Shawshank Redemption on another podcast.
Yeah. I actually had another question for you. What do you think about the idea of a lot of, like, mainstream directors as far as their movies? What do you think the future of theirs is going to be. Is it going to switch from like big time directors like George Lucas or Michael Bay, or who is the other guy? Steven Spielberg. Are they going to all go to like independent, like how big Avatar was? I mean, like look at what happened with Indiana Jones. You know, that didn't do good at all. You know.
Well, I mean, if you really want to start looking at box office returns, look at, you know, The Lone Ranger. The thing is, like, with films and everything, they're, you know, big box office films are running into the same problem that video games are running into, where they make these huge, expensive productions, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars going into things. And, you know, it's a real crapshoot, where it's like, you know, sometimes you'll find something like, you know, Avengers, you know, was a huge production, and it hit. And then sometimes you'll get John Carter of Mars, or you'll get Planet 51, or you'll get, you know. And, you know, that's the problem with, like, big films. It's like the big system of, okay, we're going to make this huge thing. That's why a lot of studios were going on sale. And we're, you know, a lot of them were risking going bankrupt if a movie didn't succeed, is because they had this very unsustainable, you know, production routine. And, you know, like, the big name directors and everything, I don't care about a big name mainstream director or not. It's like, I actually like a lot of indie, smaller productions. And if a film looks good to me, I'll see it, is my basic premise. And sometimes a lot of things that come out are so big and so produced and so, you know, they just drip, like, we've been doing a lot with this. And it's like, I don't, you know, it's like buying a record, you know. If this looks too auto-tuned to me, you know, where it's like, oh, here's, you know, the dubstep version of this movie. And I'm just like, okay, guys, I'm out.
Steven Spielberg and George Lucas specifically, do you think that they're going to be hanging up their hats soon, probably?
Well, Lucas, you know, sold LucasArts because he wanted to ensure that the properties would continue to be produced in the future, and I think he's just kind of tired of, like, he made the prequels because that was a thing he wanted to get done, and then people started attacking him, like, oh, we own the original series, and you've ruined our childhood and all this stuff. And it's like, dude, he just made movies. I mean, there are mistakes in them, like any movie, you know. And I think he's probably gonna retire now, because what, you know, I mean, if he makes other films, it's because he wants to. It's like, that dude does not need to work if he ever wants.
Yeah.
You know, and then Steven Spielberg, he made all his money in the 90s. If he wants to work on something, he'll get it made. You know?
Right.
But it's like, you know, the Michael Bays and the Mick G's and the, you know, the people, you know, from their names, it's like studios will hire them because they always need a director, you know, to make their film. And I don't know. I mean, people like, you know, Robert Rodriguez, you know, he does whatever he wants. You know, and every so often he'll come out with the Shark Boy and Lava Girl movies, or, you know, the Spy Kids ones, I think is what they're called, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he likes making, you know, like, he's intentionally trying, you know, he's doing, like, the Quentin Tarantino thing and intentionally trying to mimic the bad movies he loves, and it's like, I don't know. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's another big one. Are you a fan of Quentin?
I think he's a little too, like, I don't know. I mean, I think if I met any of these guys, like, on the street, I think that I would definitely shake their hand and say, you know, I enjoy their films, because I do enjoy Quentin Tarantino films. But, you know, I mean, he's gone on record as saying, like, you know, if film itself stops and everything just goes digital, then he doesn't know if he's going to keep making movies. And Robert Rodriguez, you know, he's looking forward to when everything goes digital, because he's like, you know, he shot some HD footage and he's like, this is the worst it's going to look. It's only going to get better from here on out. He's like, well, all right, I'm fine with this. Like, it makes it easier to process and edit and do all kinds of stuff. And Tarantino, like, I like his work, but sometimes I think he thinks he's a little too cool for school. And, you know, other times I think he's had people that didn't understand his films, and he gets mad about that. And I don't know. I think he's an okay enough dude. Just, you know, like any creator, not everything he rolls out is going to be gold. You know?
Right. I think it seems like it's getting to be the point where, like, besides directors, just with actors and actresses, it's like, it's getting to be where the movie wants to be successful. You almost have to go with, like, an unknown actor for it to be successful, you know, because it seems like a lot of people are just getting tired of the same old actors, you know?
Well, I mean, also, it depends on the film you're making. You know, like, when they made, you know, when they cast this, you know, Superman, they're like, we don't want to try and, you know, hitch this buggy to a horse that's already, you know, ridden. But now that, you know, they're like, we need to make a new guy and hopefully he'll last all these films. And then they, for surprisingly, they went with Ben Affleck as Batman, which I'm, you know, a lot of people are angry about that. I say, I'm fine. I like Ben Affleck. He's proven himself a solid director, you know, because people used to, you know, laugh, you know, because they're like, oh, Good Will Hunting, how much did he actually do on that? But then he made, like, The Town and Argo, and it's like, oh, okay, he does have chops. Never mind, then.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of people were upset because of the whole Bennifer thing and all the other hoopla, and then Geely, and, you know, I you know, people were upset with him not because of his work, but everything else, you know?
Right. Well, what were you were saying about the Avengers, I think that movie was pretty successful, and the director from that was just from that Buffy TV show, you know? He really didn't do, like, a lot of movies, did he? That were, like, really big?
He did Alien 4, he wrote it. And,
oh, really?
And he's done a few others, I believe. He did Dr. Horrible's sing-along vlog, that was all his production. I mean, he's, you know, the thing about Avengers was, it wasn't just Avengers. Avengers was Iron Man, was Captain America, was, you know, all these other movies they made. I mean, you know, and it was an event, and they built it up for years, and now Warner Brothers and DC are gonna try and do something similar, and I say, you know, I hope the best for them, but I'm gonna try and keep my expectations low. I mean, on the other hand, you know, DC and Warner Brothers, they had the Batman trilogy, you know, they had Christopher Nolan, and they had, you know, it was its own thing. It's like Dark Knight is one of those things, when you mention a superhero movie and people go, oh yeah, man, Dark Knight. I mean, it's like, you know, Iron Man, the movies are fun, and then you've got, you know, Dark Knight, which is just like, oh wow, this is the turning point when, you know, this is the modern, you know, another modern, you know, there was like the original Batman, you know, the 1980s Batman movie, which was, you know, superheroes done kind of seriously then, and then you get, you know, you got Batman Begins, which I like, but I don't think really a lot of people were into, and then Dark Knight just blew everybody away. So.
Right. Oh yeah, his name was Joss Whedon. That was the director.
Yeah, I know Joss Whedon.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, he was more of like he did like a lot of comic book type stuff, didn't he? Too.
Yeah, he did. He had Buffy and Angel, and then he had Firefly, which was a sci-fi show.
Right.
So
he was more of like a geeky, like a lot of the geeks worshipped him, you know.
Well, that's the thing is, like, you know, he did the Avengers because they knew he could do it right. So I like the Avengers. Like that film, there's just that one sweeping shot where you just see all the Avengers attacking and their signatures, you know, moves and everything, and a big crane shot or, you know, whatever it was. And it's like, okay, this is the encapsulation of what this film needed to be, and it became, and it's good.
Yeah. So,
I have no idea what's going to happen with the, you know, when they get to the Justice League movie on the DC end of it, but.
Well, I mean, hopefully it'll be just as big, you know? I mean, you've heard about the Avengers movies within other movies, like the Hulk movies. They talked about forming a team or something at the end of the movie, you know? And they sort of led up to it.
That was the idea. I mean, they've been building that up since the first Iron Man movie, and the thing is, they had a lot riding on that because, you know, that Iron Man movie carried that. They had Iron Man, and then by the time two, I mean, think about it. They had the first Hulk movie bombed. Then they had the second Hulk movie. I'm going to be honest, I didn't see it. And the guy that played the Hulk in that one, he's not around. I mean, now people are clamoring. We're like, we want a Ruffalo Hulk movie. It's like, screw you guys. We've done two already. You don't get another Hulk till the Avengers 2.
I like the second Hulk movie. Are you saying that that guy in that movie died or something?
No, he just no. It's it that that property they had a heart. That actor wasn't like the but the problem they had with him is he would constantly try. He wanted to rewrite a lot of stuff and move stuff around, and since the first one, the director went really kind of artsy with it, trying to mimic comic book panels and stuff with the framing, and yeah, that didn't quite work. And then the second one was a different guy, and now they've got a third guy playing the Hulk. But the third guy is the best guy they've had.
So yeah.
People like him. I really believe it's because of the Joss Whedon depiction of the Hulk, because he not only did he direct the movie, he wrote it, didn't he? So
yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah. That movie... I like the Avengers. The Avengers is like the Iron Man series. It was fun.
Well, what do you think about the continuation of the individual characters, like the Iron Man 3, and then they're going to do a Captain America Winter Soldier or whatever?
Well, I mean, the whole thing with, you know, all the movies tying in, you know, the whole point is to make it that it's a universe that's bigger than just these movies, which I think is a good thing. But, you know, Right. But the problem is, like, okay, so we're going to make movies all about... You have to come out with really good stuff. Like, you know, the Thor was really good, and they're going to make a Thor 2. And, you know, Captain America, the first one was what it needed to be. I don't think Captain America was a great film, but, you know, it was what it needed to be. You know, and I think if I'd really... What I would have really liked to see would have been the in the original Captain America story, he gets frozen, and then he wakes up, and he has to fit down to what the 60s was like, because it's like, oh wait, you have black people in the army, and they're not just privates. You know, it's like, you know, stuff like that. And we didn't see any of that in the Avengers, so it's like, we're not going to see that. It's going to be, you know, him fighting his bad guys and everything.
Right.
I mean, I like the Captain America movie for what it was, and it introduced him as a character. So,
they only had one. The Winter Soldier is supposed to be the sequel. That's going to come out in 2014, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, you know, with these things, it's like you have to commit to making a movie. You know, sometimes several movies for each one. I don't know. I mean, movies like, you know, the Green Lantern movie. I didn't see it, but I heard that, like, you know, the Green Lantern comic book is mostly a space opera, and then the movie wasn't really a space opera. So,
yeah, so. I watched it. It wasn't that bad. I'd say at least maybe try to watch it if nothing, just for the visuals. It was sort of interesting.
I don't know. And then Ryan Reynolds is going to be Deadpool in a Deadpool movie, which,
oh yeah,
I don't know.
Well, that's what he was in the. Well, the Wolverine movie, wasn't he?
Yeah, so, I don't know, man. I like Ryan Reynolds, but I don't know.
I actually liked, a lot of people hated the movie, but I actually liked Blade Trinity. Mm. It wasn't that bad, I didn't think.
I didn't see any of the Blade movies. I've been meaning to, but was Blade Trinity the one he made after he got out of prison?
I think so, yeah.
That was the, I gotta get some money.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. But if you know a movie that I'd like to mention that I enjoy is probably my favorite Disney movie, if I had picked one off the top of my head, would probably be Hercules. And I don't think most people are going to say that. It, you know, the style of it, it's the combination of comedy and yet there's a story, and you know, I figured you'd like some of the CG in it.
I never saw it. Was that a cartoon movie or?
Yeah, it was a traditionally animated film, but there were CG effects, like the clouds in Olympus were, you know, morphing of CG paintings and stuff, and and it had a cartoon kind of. I never watched the cartoon because I don't think I had Disney at the Disney Channel at the time, but you know, just the line work on that show, because it's all based on, you know, the old Greek, Greco-Roman, you know, lion work and paintings and everything. And I don't know, man. It's the solid, you know, it's just like when I see an Art Deco, you know, sculpture or you know, piece of furniture or something, where it's just like, these lines are bold and they express the character in a very simple way.
I guess my probably my favorite Disney cartoon that was sort of inspirational, which I wish they would make a sequel, and I'm sure you're probably not going to guess what I'm going to say, is the Incredibles.
Was that one Disney? I thought that was...
Yeah, Disney's Incredibles, wasn't it?
I guess, I don't know. I thought that was a... Wasn't that
Dream? Or, no, I'm sure... I'm sorry, not Disney. I mean, wasn't that DreamWorks?
That's what I said.
Yeah. Yeah, DreamWorks. I guess that'd be my favorite DreamWorks movie. Like the cartoon, I guess. I liked it a lot better than like those Ice Age movies.
Well, yeah. I don't blame you. Ice Age 1 was a solid film. If they'd stopped there, it'd be fine. Now...
You gotta keep milking it, man. You gotta keep milking it.
Hey, I'm Ray Romano, and for some reason, me and Queen Latifah, we got together. Yeah.
Just... I don't know, man. I mean, Ice Age movies. They wait till, like, the fourth one to bring in dinosaurs. Whatever. I don't care anymore. I mean... The thing is, I love stuff to do with, like, mammoths and stuff like that, you know? Especially if it was, like, freezing and bringing them back, you know? That kind of crap is fascinating to me. You know, it's like every time I hear talk about cloning a mammoth, I'm like, yes, yes, do it, yes!
Yeah. Well, even my little brother, he likes a lot of the CG movies, he was like, he couldn't believe that they're coming out with, a Disney Planes movie where it was supposed to be the cars, but with planes.
I can. My problem with that, basically, that's all John Lasseter. That's all John Lasseter's baby. And the thing is, my argument with cars and planes and any movie where the stuff like that is alive is I saw the Tex Avery cartoon. He did one about cars and he did one about planes. And that's all I ever need to see. And
you need to see that, and then Herbie Fully Loaded.
I don't know, but I mean the Cars movies. It's like, okay, I get that. That was for kids. That, you know, it's like Pixar. You know, a lot, we're spoiled in that Pixar make movies like WALL-E and stuff like this, these. Things that work for kids, and adults are like, this is such a deep story. But you know, it's like Cars and Cars 2, where it's a secret agent story and. I don't know.
You got to have Owen Williams be in Cars, man. You got to keep milking that, you know?
It's not for me, and I don't care. I mean, they can make brilliant movies if they want to. I mean, sometimes it's like a curveball or one out from left field, like Monsters University. Did we... really need a prequel? Okay. I mean, I heard it's a good-looking film, and I heard it's funny, so...
Did that already come out?
Yeah, I believe so.
Is that on DVD? Because that's probably another one that I'd like to see.
I don't think so. I believe it came out because I recall people saying they saw it, but... You know, I like Monsters, Inc. The idea of it is very solid because, like, every kid freaked out about monsters when they were a kid. It's like a Calvin and Hobbes story. It's just some stuff. I don't know. Casting Billy Crystal as a monster. Like, hey, yeah. Kid, let me tell you the story about when I was a complaining Jewish guy. I mean, but yeah, I mean, I like, if we want to talk about movies real quick, you know, I like a lot of old movies, you know, stuff that's way older than me, because I like to have my mind likes to drift into thinking about the past as this other world kind of thing, you know, so I like, you know, movies like Metropolis, which Metropolis has, you know, a huge story behind it about the lost footage, you know, how they thought it was lost forever, and they had different cuts of the film trying to piece it together, and then they find the, you know, up front with the majority of the footage intact, you know.
Right.
It's like that whole, you know, that whole story, and then when you see the film... It is epic, because, like, I watched it originally, the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, I'm liking this film, it's just I can see some of the flaws in it, and then I watched it with this great commentary track on the original version of it that Kino put out, and I was like, oh, okay, I see what the guy was reaching for with this one, And then on the new one where they inserted the found footage in like 2010, I believe it was, it's a much longer film, and it's like, oh wow, there is a lot in this. And that wasn't like when it came out, I can understand why people didn't get it. And you know, and it's like I don't know, that film, there's a lot of the history, and then there's also a lot of potential where it makes my mind think of like, imagine if you discovered a lost film that you didn't know existed and it had all this crazy sci-fi stuff. I mean, it influenced Blade Runner and films generation, you know, long after it. So
yeah,
I mean, I like those kind of movies. I like old movies. I like, you know, Citizen Kane with Orson Welles. Great film. You know, I'm going to say Casablanca is one of my favorite movies. Like, I, you know, as near as like a near perfect film as I could say. Like, it has a style, you know, like if you ever wanted to recreate that, and a lot of movies have used its plot. That Pamela Anderson movie, what was it? Barbed Wire used it. Yeah. But it's like, you know, as it is, it's probably, you know, it's a solid movie. It's a solid, in my mind, a good film encapsulates an area, a world, and the characters, and a time, you know, and it's like a little time capsule. And every time I watch that movie, I'm pulling it back out. Just like when I watch Bill and Ted. Except, right. You know, it's a very different world.
Yeah.
And I also really love Woody Allen movies. You know, and there's... Have you ever watched a Woody Allen movie, Ian?
No. I don't know what movies he did, so I can't say yes or no.
He did Manhattan. He did Annie Hall. He's done... A lot of his movies are... They're kind of very long. And he does some comedies... And some kind of become comedies. Like Annie Hall is about he plays himself, basically. It's a long movie about them breaking up, and then like they're together, and she kind of drifts apart. And then after she leaves, he really wants to get back together, and she doesn't. And it's one of those movies where you follow the character. You know, there's scenes where he talks to the camera, and you know, and steps outside of his character a little bit, but it's a real, you know, you follow around. Originally, there was supposed to be like a murder mystery in it, but they were finding it didn't work, so they just made it a big long romantic not romantic because they break up in it, but you know, it became this big long story. And then Manhattan, he's playing himself again as a writer, and he's dating a 17-year-old, and he has an affair with his friend's either a wife or fiance or something, and then that falls apart, and then he goes back to the 17-year-old that he's trying to tell to move on with her life, and he comes back, and he's like, no, wait, don't go, and she's like, well, what do you think's gonna happen if I leave? And then they just look at him.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't know, I like his films, though, because, like, they're very set in New York, and he did Midnight in Paris recently, which... He does like two movies a year, and Midnight in Paris was about Owen Wilson. Was basically he has a character that plays him, and since he's gotten too old to play himself, he had for a while he had one film he had Jason, you know, the kid from American Pie,
Jason Biggs.
Yeah, Jason Biggs play him, and it kind of worked. And then later he had Owen in Midnight in Paris. He had Owen Wilson play him. And that one worked, where his character was and his fiance are in Paris getting stuff for their wedding, and he's realizing, he's like, I don't want to get married, I don't want to settle down to this waspy family that's wanting me to marry, and it's like, because he starts renting, and like, he'll walk around the streets of Paris at midnight, and all of a sudden, famous people from the 1920s come up to him, so he meets like Gertrude Stein, and like Salvador Dali, and all these... You know, these figures from, you know, the early, you know, 20th century Parisian history. And, you know, it's the whole story is basically that he's a dreamer that doesn't want to settle down just yet. So it's a fun movie. It played, like, I mean, some people were upset with the story, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, I can't really think of, like, hardly any movies that I liked that was really before my time. I remember I used to like that Parent Trap movie.
The original one or the one with
Lindsay
Lohan?
Yeah, the original one. The original one.
Okay. I don't know. I like, I mean, I like some weird movies like the Cat from Outer Space and, you know, what Don Knotts, I think, is in it. I'm not sure. Yeah, there's a cat with a talking collar and from outer space. And then, Disney also had these, like, TV movies that they also released on video called Not Quite Human. It was Not Quite Human 1, Not Quite Human 2, Not Quite Human 3. It's about a little android boy.
Huh.
Well, he wasn't little. He was, like, a teenager. It's a weird movie. I mean, weird series of movies, but it's like, I don't know. I also really like bad movies, and they're just bad enough that they're fun. You know, they're family movies, but not like, you know, family movie. You know what I mean? Where like you'd watch them and go, okay, I can watch this. It's stupid, but it's fun enough. You know, not like family. Eh? Mm.
Did you ever get into that Animal House movie? Did you like that? Because that was before our time, too.
I watched it in college because you have to. And some friends of mine watched it. And I liked the characterization, but it didn't feel like a full movie to me. It just felt like a series of the scenes that you've seen people talk about. And I was like, I'm not really following the story, a lot of it. So,
were you a big Rodney Dangerfield fan?
Oh, I'll tell you what. No, not really.
That wasn't bad.
He's all right. It's, you know, he's with a lot of character actors. It's like you have your thing. You know, I didn't see that one where he played a dog. But
what about that movie? Going to School or something? Wasn't that what it was called?
Back to School or something?
Back to School. Yeah,
I didn't see that one either. I mean, I liked him, but he was never really my kind of comic because it was always, hey, let me tell you how horrible I am. That's such a tiny, you know, like.
What about Caddyshack?
I've never seen it.
Oh, man, that was a classic, man.
Yeah, everyone says that, but, I mean.
Yo, Bill Murray.
Yeah, I know. I've been meaning to see it. I never, you know, whenever I go to rent movies or whatever, it was never around, so I just never grabbed it.
People would argue that was, like, one of Bill Murray's best movies, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever seen the R. Crumb documentary called Crumb?
No.
Yeah, you'd probably like that one. It's fascinating. It's also kind of depressing.
What's it about?
It's about the artist R. Crumb. He was an underground comics creator from, you know, he got started in the 60s. And his stuff is, like, it really got popular when he started doing acid, I think. But he, when you see his family, like, you realize, you know, he's a weird, he's got these weird, you know, people, you know, think he's got, like, perversions, he's got a lot of issues. Like, his ideal woman has, like, you know, a large rump and strong legs, and he can ride her around and, like, hop on her back and just get a piggyback ride. And he's, in the documentary, he said when he was, like, 4 years old, he had a sexual attraction to Bugs Bunny. And he used to carry a picture of him around in his wallet. And then it got all wrinkled, so he had his mom iron it. And it got all brown and brittle.
Oh.
And then, yeah, one of his mom's girlfriends, like, had this pair of cowboy boots that used to give him a boner. And she would give him horsey rides on her foot, and all the while he'd be singing, "Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me." You know, and he made comics about this, and everyone reads it. They're like, "Wow, we know a lot about what he likes." Yeah, and you see it, you meet his family, and you realize, like, you know, he and his brother, when he was growing up, they used to draw comics. Like, you know, his brother would kind of force him to draw them a lot, so that he got good at them. And apparently his brother, like, he has two brothers. One who would, he would sit on a bed of nails and pass the string through his body every couple of months. And, and then his other brother was still living at home for a while. And, you know, you could see his mom would yell something while they were filming off camera. And he'd go, "Yeah, all right, mother." And, like, they showed some of his work, like when they were kids that like they would both draw, you know, these like Robinson Crusoe stories and whatever. And his brother, like, as you would see, he started getting troubled, and the characters, the words would fill up the page to where eventually you'd see just like the character's eyes poking out from the bottom, and then eventually it just became all huge text. And then after a while, the pages just got filled with squiggles and like wiggle, you know, and curly lines and all kinds of stuff. Like, apparently he killed himself like short, you know, sometime after the film. But yeah, you see that and you go, wow, you start watching it, you're like, he's got himself more together. some of the film is like him and his wife and their daughter. Well, I think it was her daughter, and they got married or whatever, and they were moving to France because they were saying France was just a little less evil and messed up than the U.S. Because, you know, he's one of those guys that he listens to like old time blues that's like, you know, really acoustic and like a lot of stuff with banjo and stuff, you know, old ragtime records and, you know, actual records on vinyl. And, you know, they were talking about like, oh, you know, we went to visit one of our kids' friends, and they were sitting there watching TV in this chair that was shaped like a giant football helmet. And we're just like, well, okay, we're out of here. We're sorry. So.
Interesting.
It's a fascinating film, and if you ever see it, I would really recommend watching it back to back with American Splendor, which is about his friend Harvey Pekar, who was a comics writer, and he illustrated some of his stories. And his life was kind of screwed up, but it came out all right. And he was played by the guy from Sideways. But yeah, those two, I would definitely recommend watching them together, because you'll need one to pull you out of the depression you get in after the first one.
Right. I guess one question I would have for you to sort of wrap things up here is, I mean, now that we sort of discussed what, you know, like what inspired us and what we've been into, what things would you like to see come out of like future movies, or what things are you sort of scared of that you think is going to be the direction of that a lot of movies are going to go to?
I think eventually, like, you know, I really like indie stuff, people experimenting and trying new things and bucking formulas. And unfortunately, I see that, you know, there's a market for mainstream stuff. You know, we've talked about, like, you know, Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men and stuff like that, where it's like, you know, it's a very specific audience that, you know, it's very successful because it goes for a certain kind of people, you know. And it's like, I see that eventually, you know, mass media is just pulling further and further away. Because when you have to appease every, you know, when you try to go for everybody, you really appease nobody.
Yeah, you really got to water it down and go to it's like you go to the lowest common denominator, you know?
Well, I mean, that's, when you look at newspaper comics anymore, it's like, there's just a lot of, hey, here's something that's not really funny or creative or interesting. And it's like, you know, I mean, there are some people that are, you know, talented and creative, but they don't get syndicated, or they don't, you know, they don't get into these things, and they end up making a webcomic and finding their niche there. And I think that, you know, a lot of things, when there's this huge industry to create stuff and hundreds of millions of dollars are being piped into things, I really see it as, like, you know, a bubble. Just like, you know, there was that whole art bubble that I think, the modern art bubble, or whatever you want to call it, when, like, you know, works were just selling for millions and millions of dollars and had no reason to. Today, it's like, we've talked about the video game industry and how there's, you know, you occasionally get the Grand Theft Autos that make, you know, $1 billion in their first week, and you get the Bioshock Infinites, but it's like, most games are not of that caliber. And when you're putting that much money into developing them before you release it, and you can sell like 4 million copies and it be considered a flop, that's what I can see happening to other things. Not just, you know, movies and TV shows, where it's like, you know, even there's gonna be a divide where, you know, stuff is like, you know, where there'll be like cable TV and there'll be news, you know, newspapers or other kind of media, but, you know, the people that watch that are, you know, people set on, like, being connected to that. No, not people like us that are moving away from watching cable television and watching stuff on the internet. Not people that are seeking stuff out.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it definitely, it's like money can drive a whole lot of things, and it's not necessarily where they have like the viewers in mind. It's just that whatever will make the money, you know, make the ratings, I guess.
I mean, eventually, in, you know, smarter, independent stuff is going to break through, because it's like, we will tell you what's funny and what's good music. It's like, well, yeah, but a good movie and a good, you know, whatever is going to break out regardless. It doesn't matter if you put a, you know, $100 billion into something. If there's a good thing that people want, they'll find it.
Right.
Which comes back all the way back again to my aspect of, you know, what makes art? It's like, do you need to be making, you know, tons of bank from your art, or do you just need to be making it and being happy? And as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you like what you do, then you're an artist, and, you know, I don't care who tells you different one way or the other. If they want to be snobby, or if they want to try and say, well, you're not making the buku banks we are, baby, you know.
Yeah. No, you're right. The thing that I hate, though, is, like, I see a lot of shows, like, I'm watching that show, Making Monsters, and, like, other shows I like Hot Set or Movie Magic, that you really get into, but because they're not pulling in the ratings, then that show just goes poof, you know, and then that show that you were really into is gone, and it just sucks for you. Well, and not the majority, I guess.
Well, that's the thing I hear a lot of independent creators get, you know, saying, is like, you know, you make your own projects for you and your audience, and you don't have to bend to certain things. It's like, you know, when Joss Whedon made Dr. Horrible's sing-along vlog, you know, they filmed in like 6 days. It was all done with his studio. And it's like, he released it on the internet, and then he sold it, and he made money from that. It was successful. It was a very popular thing. And it's like, you know, if he tried to, you know, sell that to some network, it would have come out like Dollhouse. You remember that?
Yeah.
Or maybe, yeah, Firefly, where it ran for a season and then they just said, not popular enough. And it's like, you know, people, you know, I've heard, you know, people from comics creators and people who make podcasts and other things, they're like, you know, you make your own project. Sometimes you might sell it to some, you know, to a studio, but it's like, you know, you find your audience and then you make stuff for them. And hopefully you don't get caught up in the machine that will eat your product before it has a chance to grow. I mean, shows like Seinfeld, you know, Seinfeld had, what, 10 years? And they had, you know, a lot of time to find their footing. Because when they launched, nobody was a huge Seinfeld fan. Nobody knew what it was, and they didn't know what it was. And then, you know, as they had a while to figure out it's a show about, you know, where a comedian gets his material, it managed to figure itself out.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually a little bit fuzzy on, like, the reason that we even need, like, networks, or why there's networks on TV and why they need ratings. I mean, as long as the cable companies are making the money and then giving people that make the shows money, I don't know why it needs to be, like, that popular. I mean, isn't the only reason we have, like, specific networks and channels is just to organize that type of content?
Well, you're acting as though the cable companies divide all that money up evenly, versus the fact that a show that is watched more, they get more money for that. So that's why they want to be more popular. If it was all subsidized by the cable companies having it on, you know, there would be no. I mean, if you were a network, would you rather have, you know, The Walking Dead and these, you know, and Mad Men and all these hit shows on your network, or would you rather be the home shopping network and you barely staying afloat? I mean, I don't know. The Home Shopping Network might be making all kinds of bank. I don't know. But, you know, these networks, they make, if they have a popular program, they want to milk that.
Right. And, well, why do we even have networks? Why don't the producers of the TV show, like, why don't they go straight to, like, the cable companies? Or, I mean, why do you need, like, a middleman network, I guess, is the question.
Because that's the networks have been around. They existed before there was cable. The networks, you know, they are the big power in the thing. And they, you know, a show can't just sell itself to a cable network. It has to be sold to a, you know, to a place that's going to run it. It's, you know, that's how television programming works. It's the show gets bought by somebody who's going to run it. You can't you know, cable companies don't buy the don't make the programming. It's the networks that run the programming.
Right, but I'm asking why were networks formed? I mean, were they just to organize content or just to have like the same type of shows on one channel? I mean, why don't we just have like random shows, I guess, on TV?
Because when they got formed, they were the channels when they got formed. You know, when you got back in the day, it would be like ABC, CBS, and NBC. You know, those were the major networks, and they coordinated running the same programming on the same, you know, across the nation at different times and all that stuff. You know, I mean, you'd have like local channels, obviously, but like to be able to tie a huge country of, you know, networking together, that's how they got formed. They run that stuff. You know, they're in control of that. You know, you can't just get Channel 3 in the, you know, in this area. You have to go through who runs that.
Right. Well, I mean, do you think it'll go to where that you won't need like a middleman network where you could just television producers could just go to like straight to like a Netflix or whatever, and then you just have your TV lineup, your show lineup on that service, you know?
Well, I mean, networks are a giant gatekeeper, and therefore they're not going to want to go away because they're handling that much money. They're not going to go down without a fight. They're obviously trying to compete with Netflix. You know, you've got places that run, that have websites where you can see their content. The Daily Show has, you know, their website, and the Colbert Report has their website, and you know, South Park has their website that shows all their content. But, you know, if you want to watch NBC content, you usually have to go to NBC's website. You know, and, you know, NBC has all the, you know, sister networks. They've got NBC, MSNBC, CNBC, you know. So eventually content providers are going to move away to the place that they can get the easiest access to, because it's hard to work on a network when the networks have all this huge, you know, they're under a crunch to try and get the best ratings, and they pass all kinds of notes to the creators, and they have all these meetings that tell them how they need to change everything based on what they're thinking. And, you know, I don't know when it's going to happen. I mean, a lot of people our age are moving away from cable, and a lot of people are just finding the shows they want and downloading them on the internet, either legally or illegally, and that's why places like Netflix, if you've got streaming, it's a good idea to have it. You know, it's like that makes the content easier to get because people are going to get it one way or the other. Now, whether or not the networks and the cable companies, you know, can find a way to work around this and make it comfortable, who knows? I mean, you know, NBC was fighting with Apple a while ago, and then what was it? CBS was fighting with Time Warner. So, who knows?
Yeah,
there's a lot of feathers to ruffle in the fight.
Yeah, well, I've noticed, like, compared to the old days where, like, a lot of networks, when they were formed, like the G4 channel or like the Comedy Central, they were formed and you saw like that specific content that the network was supposed to represent, like games or whatever, comedy, whereas you just care about ratings and it just devolves into like cops on the G4 channel and cheaters and stuff, where it just becomes a random slew of trash instead of what the channel is supposed to mean, you know?
So basically you're saying, why don't they play music on MTV anymore?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, that's the people that are running that network. They find out what their viewers are watching and they give them more of what they want, because, you know, network TV, they give their, that's what they do. If they have a candy that the viewers want, they feed them that candy. And, you know, the people that produce shows, it's like, if you get signed to a network deal, you know, the network pays all kinds of production costs. If you have enough episodes to go into syndication, there's syndication deals which will pay you pretty much in perpetuity. You know, all kinds of reasons to be on a network. Now, you know, it's the problem is that the network is so concerned with ratings that they'll launch a bunch. They spend millions of dollars on pilots, which, you know, the test episodes of a show, you know, first episode of a show, and sometimes they air and sometimes they won't, but they try it, and then they pick out so many shows, and then they run those. And then those, you know, a lot of those don't make it for the second season or even halfway through, you know. And now there are networks that are trying to do the whole, well, why bother with the pilot? Why not just, you know, there's a lot of experimentation going on.
So, yeah. I think though that they'll end up, because of that, I think they'll end up losing like a lot of the older generation, like our generation, you know, that got to see the beginning of that network, and then it's changed, and now a lot of people are going to start to hate it, so they're going to have to suffer through that, I guess.
Anyway, Ian, I think it's a good place as any to call it done. So, you ready to say goodbye?
Yep, I'm ready to call it the win done.
Derp a derp. So, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll see y'all on the other side.
Peace.
More, visit NoRightsProductions.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/NoRights. And hey, why don't you check out my Tumblr at NoRights.tumblr.com.